Practically every first-person shooter has something of GoldenEye 007 in its DNA. It's arguably the most influential and critically acclaimed example of its genre, ending up as the Nintendo 64's third best-selling release. As its film counterpart, GoldenEye revitalised the cinematic series with a new lead actor and modern sensibilities. Game adaptation did the same in its own medium. Beyond igniting an FPS fire that still rages today, it kicked off a successful and consistent string of James Bond games that were often more interesting than the actual movies. As is usually the case for highly rated Nintendo games from the mid to late 90s, GoldenEye 007 was developed by Rare. This meant that production quality was basically guaranteed. Rare always brought extra care and detail to their gameplay, visuals and audio, from some of their earliest titles to, notably, the Donkey Kong Country series, which had just closed up shop on the Super Nintendo. For GoldenEye 007, the music and sound design was a joint effort. Though mostly the work of Grant Kirkhope, Graham Norgate contributed a significant amount of his own compositions and effects. Making something of a guest appearance on the soundtrack, Robin Beanland wrote a piece for an in-game elevator. Together, the three represent an unbeatable trio of acclaimed Rare musicians, and their skill shines through in GoldenEye's OST. I'm Lee Tyrrell, and this is The Sound Test, where I look in-depth into video game audio and music, along with the very people who crafted it. To learn more about the memorable tone that GoldenEye 007 took, I spoke to Grant Kirkhope about his role. It's the third of four appearances from Grant in this series, and fans of VGM won't want to miss his previous conversations about Banjo-Kazooie and Donkey Kong. I was unable to schedule talks with Graham Norgate or Robin Beanland, but I'll try my best to cover some of their work before the episode's over. For Grant, GoldenEye was only his second game at the beginning of his career, and directly following a Game Boy conversion that didn't involve original composition. From that, his involvement in Rare's first N64 shooter came as a pleasant surprise.
I originally got brought on to add guitar to Killer Instinct 2. So Robin was doing that on the arcade machine, and he wanted real, because he'd put sample guitar on the first arcade game, but they wanted real guitar on the second game. So because I was a guitar player, I did the guitar on that. And I can't remember, like, I mean, Graham Norgate, who was doing GoldenEye and Blastcore at the same time, so like I'm really busy on Blastcore. I already just got there about, for about 4 or 5 months. He said, look, you know, can you take over GoldenEye? I'm busy on. I was like, fantastic.
Graham Norgate would later return to GoldenEye after finishing up Blastcore, and we'll soon listen to a little more of his music. For Grant, the project was a definite step up in his VGM career. It took him from the incredibly limited pens of the Game Boy into a wider world made possible by the N64's hardware. It also allowed him to actually write music, since his debut OST for Donkey Kong Land 2 was based wholly on David Wise's melodies. As exciting a prospect as GoldenEye was to Grant, it also presented certain challenges.
I played a metal band, right, for years, right? So I was used to that thing where, you know, writing songs, you've got someone to sing it, haven't you? You've got someone that sings a melody with lyrics. And for me, working in games, the first thing I noticed was like, oh, I haven't got a singer. How's this going to work? And it took a while for me to understand, you know, to get it working, that you have to write a melody and no one's singing it. You have to play it with something. So that for me was kind of the biggest thing that when I first started, that I didn't realise that was going to be a challenge. Tim and Chris and Greg and all the guys at Rare were massive on melody. Like, they were like, you know, Nintendo forever. And they used to preach to all the composers there about, it's all about the melody. That's the most important thing. You know, you need to be able to write a melody that, people can listen to for 2 hours playing a level and not get bored of it. Which is quite, it's hard, you know.
That philosophy has followed Grant to this day. His latest soundtrack for Mario & Rabbids Kingdom Battle is a melodic joy from start to finish. You can hear him talk about that very game in the final, 16th episode of this series. But Mario & Rabbids is pure Kirkhope. The nature of GoldenEye as part of a larger franchise required Grant to toe the line between his own creativity and the much-loved pedigree of Bond music up to that point.
You know, you're always looking for that melody. I think when it comes to GoldenEye, the thing about GoldenEye is that, you know, you don't need much. The Bond motifs are so strong, they're so brilliant, that you hardly need anything to let people know they're in Bondland, you know. So, apart from the melody itself, just having that chord sequence and some kind of beat behind it was even enough. Like, you know, like in the pause menu on GoldenEye, just having those chords with that kind of beat, it's just Bond, you know, it just sounds like Bond, just because of that chord sequence. So I think, so you didn't need that to blast it with melody all the time, but when you needed it, you got that fantastic tune to play with.
There's plenty of Grant's own composition throughout GoldenEye, and his use of the various Bond themes and atmospheres are never simply tacked on. He often repackaged them in interesting ways, or played with instrumentation that put decades-old melodies under a new light. One instance, in the game's main theme, cleverly pushes the N64's memory limitations in order to use a genuine guitar instead of a digital sound-alike.
I think we worked out that because there's such a lot of, you know, GoldenEye was one of the first games on the console, so it was a very, very tiny memory space, even tinier than Banjo. So we worked out that to get the Bond theme tune, they could cut the guitar into like maybe three separate riffs, and you could get the entire theme tune from that. Like, literally, it was like four samples, and you can just about get the tune from just using those four little bits cut up. So that's how we got it to work.
Fortunately for Grant, and us listeners who can hear his joy in GoldenEye, having to use Bond themes didn't feel like an obligation. In fact, having those famous melodies ready for use was a bit of a safety net for his future work, a precaution he's shown not to need with every outing since. Where some less talented composers would be happy to half-heartedly slap the odd motif on top every now and then, Grant saw it as an opportunity to explore Bond beyond two or three well-known themes.
You know, when I first got given that game, I was like, my God, this is fantastic, because I mean, you know, I'm of that generation that, you know, the Bond movie of the year, you know, was the movie of the year every single time it came out, right? So, you know, you couldn't wait to see the next one. So I was a massive Bond, I'm still a massive Bond fan. You know, I mean, and I think that I just tried to stick in as many references to the Bond music as I could. You know, we were given the license to use the Monty Norman tune, right? And I'm not convinced that all the games that came after that were allowed to use it as much as we were. We could do what we like with it, so that's fantastic. I was like, oh my God, I can use the actual Bond theme tune and, you know, turn it into anything I want.
Looking a little deeper into the history of Bond films, Grant took influence from the individual themes for each, as well as overarching series-wide motifs. In particular, Frigate, one of the game's most popular tracks, features several different shades. In this instance, where exactly did Grant look to for inspiration?
You know, I stuck together, in that track, I stuck together my Faith No More, We Care A Lot drum beat with the Duran Duran sort of orchestral samples from View To A Kill, that single, plus a bit of Goldfinger, and we stuck it all together, and that's how it came out, right? So, you know, I was loving it. It was great fun to do it. And actually, I had, the original version of that tune, I had more orchestral stabs, So it did sound more like View to a Kill. But I was told that that was probably best to take a few out because it was too reminiscent of that track, because we didn't have the license to that track. I had to reduce it a bit to be a bit less like it. But yeah, that was that. That track is all about that.
For reference, here's a snippet of Faith No More's We Care A Lot, whose distinctive bass and drum pattern keeps Grant's frigate afloat. Similarly, this is A View to a Kill, Duran Duran's Bond theme from 1985. It's clear which elements of these pieces that Grant deliberately chose to reference, and how much he enjoyed mixing them in with his own ideas. Meeting you with a view. The overall sound is varied, but definitely leans toward industrial-tinged electronics and their interplay with more traditional orchestral instruments. The tone is pitch-perfect for dodgy spy work and infiltration, so how did Grant come to settle on it?
Like, I kind of felt, you know, doing GoldenEye, because you've got such a strong theme, it was... It just felt right to have that kind of mix of electronic and kind of, you know, and strings go and like orchestra at the same time, and even so in Perfect Dark. And I kind of feel that was quite early for that kind of sound. It was like, it wasn't, you know, I didn't do it because I was trying to be extra experimental. I just felt like it fitted together. You're coupling the orchestra with the kind of, you know, the drum beats and stuff and synths and stuff, it seemed to work well. I mean, it's, you know, that's a massive sound these days. So, yeah, in Perfect Dark especially, I felt that it worked on that. It just seemed right to me at the time.
Perfect Dark is considered a spiritual successor to GoldenEye 007. It continued GoldenEye's gameplay and atmosphere, even sharing a lot of staff in common. In discussing four different releases with Grant, I ran out of time to ask more about Perfect Dark. I'd like to dedicate a future episode to it, where I hope to include thoughts from Graham Norgate and David Klinick, who also contributed alongside Grant. The style of both Perfect Dark and GoldenEye deviates slightly from Grant's usual output by being less upbeat, but his trademark tendencies still cut through. Antenna Cradle, the game's final battle, is packed with well-arranged melodies, but they come with a fast-paced, rhythmic edge that's as cool as a shaken, firmly unstirred martini.
I think with that one, I used to play metal bands as a kid, right? And on my website, I've got a YouTube channel that I don't really do anything with, but there's three metal tracks on there. And then one of them's called Absolution, or No Absolution, something like that. If you listen to that riff on there, that's the riff that I used for the Antenna Cradle. So I just put that in there and did it, but, you know, and did it like that.
As I've tried to cover wherever possible in this series, boss music is a massively important part of game soundtracks. Good music can make or break a boss and stick in a player's mind for the rest of their lives. Composers like Grant are well aware of this, so I wondered how he thinks about them and constructs them.
I think regards Boss music, like I think, I feel like I've got more adventurous with Boss music as time's gone on. So now when I do these massive big orchestral things, like this, I just like throw everything there in the kitchen sink if I can, you know. You need to make it exciting and lots of variation. Yeah, I like that kind of, it's a bit like, I kind of think it's a bit like John Williams. Like, I think when John Williams writes his big epic sort of battle scenes or action sequences, he has, you know, I kind of call it his kind of treadwater music. So in between the big themes, he's got just this kind of manic music that goes everywhere. There's lots of, you know, millions of ideas in a short space of time. And then he's right in the money when it comes to the big theme.
Today, Grant has heaps of Boss themes under his belt, and we go into even more depth about them for his Mario and Rabbids episode. Antenna Cradle was his first go at scoring a boss, without David Wise's melodies as a focus, but it has a very similar mindset to his latest big battle tracks. Of course, it prominently toys with a number of well-established Bond motifs, while juggling adapted metal riffs and breakneck percussion.
I, in my own little way, tried to work that bit out, tried to go, well, you get the big theme here, and then you go off and go crazy, back to the big theme, go off and go crazy, and I kind of treat it like that to this day. So like even in Mario Rabbids, it's still like that. It's kind of big theme hits you in between the eyes, and it's like off it goes to do crazy stuff. That's the way I always approach it. I just feel like your boss battles need to be super special in every respect. So you need to, you know, get the music cranking and get the rest of it going at the same time, while the graphics on the gameplay needs to be the same. So I always try to, you know, really push the boat out for those tunes.
Grant entered new musical territory when he took on GoldenEye, but that wasn't the only area where he had to learn on the job. He shared sound effects with Grey of Norgate too, like the game's many gunshots and explosions. There's a nostalgic feeling to GoldenEye, which comes from a careful ear for how Bond and other action films have sounded over the years. It may even be possible that Rare's FPS Juggernaut shares authentic effects that were actually used in the movie series.
Back at Rare in those days, right, we had a big sound effects library. You can buy them, they're on CD, right, you know, from studios and stuff like that. And so, you know, you do tend to use, back in those days, there were old ricochets that were probably in the Bond films of cowboy westerns and all that stuff. So and we used to watch films and we used to recognise gunshots that we'd used, ricochets and all that stuff. So I'm pretty sure it'd be in there. It'd be the same sound effects CD they used in the 60s, I bet.
For contemporary games, it would be impossible to say that good sound is easier to design. However, it's definitely more convenient. In the 90s, Grant and other composers had to take laborious steps to locate a single noise. Even then, the sound wasn't always quite right, and the whole process would have to start again. What was it like to work in a time where there were literal libraries and no online digital collections to sift through?
It was a bit weird. Like these days, people have like great big libraries sat on a server somewhere. You get a search engine, you type in, you know, fart, and it brings up all the farts. You choose the one you like, right? Back at Rare, they didn't have that. So we just had massive catalogs that were like Yellow Pages directories. You had to go through it and look through every single one. You'd find Gunshot 14. It's on CD 10, track index 2. You have to go and find the CD, put it in the CD player, listen to the gunshot. Oh, I don't like that one, right? Find another one, go and find the CD, because Dave might have it, or Robin or Graham will have it. Get it off them. And it was such a slow process. So I guess that once you found a few that you liked, you couldn't be asked to look anymore, because it was too much of an effort, you know.
The track that's been playing in the background is Robin Beanland's Muzak-inspired elevator tune. It was his only contribution to GoldenEye, as Robin was already in the throes of an impressive career that began with Killer Instinct and continues to this day through Sea of Thieves. On the other hand, Graham Norgate provided at least a third of the soundtrack, which he returned to after finishing music for Blast Corps. GoldenEye's sound department must have had a revolving door, as Grant departed the project on Graham's return to work on Dream, the game that became Banjo-Kazooie.
I didn't finish it because I guess I was maybe halfway through or whatever, Tim Stamper and Greg came to see me and said, you know, can you just play some of your music, please? And I was like, oh, I was panicking, I thought I was going to get sacked. And so they just kind of sat there and went, sort of nodded to each other and said, right, you want to come and start work on Dream? I was like, well, I'll, you know, when I finish GoldenEye. I said, no, you finished on GoldenEye right now. Took me off the game. So I never finished it. And Graham came back to finish it off.
GoldenEye 007 was in safe hands, whether handled by Grant or Graham Norgate. More experienced, Graham took to the role confidently, while Grant used it as a springboard for the melodic mastery we all know him for today. Robin only needed one track to make an impression, as he'd done previously with Donkey Kong Country's Funky's Fugue. All in all, GoldenEye's soundtrack bubbles with the professionalism of its composers and the respect they had for Bond's well-known themes. Originality dances beneath world-famous motifs, allowing Rare's adaptation a recognisable tone that, in the end, have left it with a better legacy than its film inspiration.
You know, I was just that Rare. I'd not been there very long. I was like mega excited to be there. I thought I was in Disneyland. It was just fantastic. And so to get given the chance to do that was just like unbelievable, you know. So I guess my excitement overtook the scariness perhaps of what it could have been like. It's just fantastic to do that. I mean, it was an awesome game.
Thanks to Grant for speaking to me for the sound test, but thank you too for taking the time to listen. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please make sure to subscribe or follow on whatever platform you might be listening on. There will be a new episode each week, though we are nearing the end of this 16-episode series. The next episode features Mike Moraski, Ellen McLean, and Jonathan Colton in all of their second appearances on the show. They'll be talking to me about Left 4 Dead and Left 4 Dead 2, which is packed with incredible generative music that comes together to create a highly subjective experience. All our Patreon supporters can receive early access to this episode for a single dollar, so head on over to patreon.com/_secretcave to pledge your support and hear next week's episode right now. Of course, this doesn't apply if you're already a patron and hearing this episode in advance.